ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Tapyante Loka Tapena Sadhava Prayasho Jana Paramaradhanam Tad Dhi Purushasya Kilatmana I'll just recite the verse. Tapyante lokatapena sadava prayasho jana paramaradhanam taddi purushasya kilatmana Tapyante lokatapena sadava prayasho jana paramaradhanam taddi purushasya kilatmanah. Please repeat. Tapyante voluntarily suffer. Lokatapena because of the suffering of people in general. Sadhava, saintly persons. Prayasha, almost always. Jana, such persons. Parama Aradhanam, the topmost method of worshipping. Tat, that activity. He, indeed. Purushasya, of the Supreme Person. Akila Atmanaha, who is the Super Soul of everyone. Translation. It is said that great personalities almost always accept voluntary suffering because of the suffering of people in general. This is considered the highest method of worshiping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is present in everyone's heart. Please repeat. It is said that great personalities almost always accept voluntary suffering because of the suffering of people in general. This is considered the highest method of worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is present in everyone's heart. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Here is an explanation of how those engaged in activities for the welfare of others are very quickly recognized by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 1868-69, Yat idam paramam guyam mad bhakteshvadipasyati nachatasman manushyesu kaschan me priyakritamaha. One who preaches the message of Bhagavad Gita to my devotees is most dear to me. No one can excel them in satisfying me by worship. End quote. There are different kinds of welfare activities in the material world. But the supreme welfare activity is, who can say, what is the supreme welfare activity?
Preaching Krishna consciousness.
There are different kinds of welfare activities in the material world, but the supreme welfare activity is the spreading of Krishna consciousness. Other welfare activities cannot be effective, for the laws of nature and the results of karma cannot be checked. It is by destiny or the laws of karma that one must suffer or enjoy. So I'm going to speak at intervals just to expand upon some points, and then I'll speak more at the end. But the idea here is that whatever our karma is, or whatever our destiny is, we are bound to enjoy or suffer. We cannot change that by any material method. We cannot change it for ourselves, and we cannot change it for others. Srila Prabhupada told us that in India there is a saying that wherever you go, your forehead goes with you. The idea is that our destiny is written on our forehead. And therefore sometimes when people in India are lamenting their bad luck, they go like this. Right, Maharaj? I'm so unfortunate, because it's in their forehead. It's written in their forehead. They can't escape it. So, there's a saying, even if you go to Calcutta, your forehead will go with you. Because in olden times, Calcutta was considered the city of prosperity and opportunity. So the idea is, even if you go to Calcutta, your forehead will go with you. You can't escape your destiny. There's a story in, I think, Persian culture about a rich man who sent his servant into the market to purchase some items for him. And while he was in the marketplace, he was jostled by death personified. By death personified. Death personified. Yes. Yamaraj or something like that. So he became very frightened, And he went back to his master. This was in Baghdad. He went back to his master and he said that, death, bumped me in the marketplace and looked at me in a very menacing way, and I think he's out to get me. So I'm leaving here. I'm going to Samara. So the master went into the marketplace to complete the work, and he also saw death personified there. And he was very upset. He said, you jostled my servant and you looked at him in a very menacing way and you terrified him. And Death said, I wasn't looking at him in a menacing way. I was just surprised to see him in Baghdad because I have an appointment with him this evening in Samara. So our destiny will follow us wherever we go. So that puts a certain perspective on mundane welfare activities. But I'll come back to that with a very vivid illustration from here in Boston in 1969. Other welfare activities, besides Krishna consciousness, cannot be effective, for the laws of nature and the results of karma cannot be checked. It is by destiny or the laws of karma that one must suffer or enjoy. For instance, if one is given a court order, he must accept it, whether it brings suffering or profit. And that's also a very appropriate example because Yamaraj is like the judge and he assigns to us whatever enjoyment or suffering are due to us according to our karma. Similarly, everyone is under obligations to karma and its reactions. No one can change this. Therefore, the Shastra says, Tasyaiva hetu praiteta kovido nalabhyate yad prabhatam upariyada. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.5.18. One should endeavor for that which is never attained by wandering up and down in the universe as a result of the reactions of karma. What is that? One should endeavor to become Krishna conscious. Yes. This is a statement by Sri Narada Muni, and Sri Prahlad Maharaj makes a similar statement that there is no use spending our energy trying to increase our material happiness or decrease our material distress because they are ordained. No one goes to the temple to pray for distress. Do any of you pray for distress?
We could do that.
Yes. She did. That's true. That's a good example. But generally, people do not pray for distress. They want to avoid distress. They want happiness. They may pray for some form of happiness or something that they feel will facilitate their happiness. But Prahlad Maharaj says, there's no value in trying to increase your happiness, because happiness will come automatically, just like distress. We don't endeavor for distress, but it comes automatically as the result of our karma. So in the same way, even if we don't endeavor for happiness, it will come automatically. So rather than waste our time trying to increase our happiness or decrease our distress, what should we use our time and energy for? To become Krishna conscious. Yes. Now we come back to welfare activities. If one tries to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world, he should be understood to be performing the best welfare activity. The Lord is automatically very pleased with him. If the Lord is pleased with him, what is left for him to achieve?
Nothing.
Correct. Correct. If one has been recognized by the Lord, even if he does not ask the Lord for anything, the Lord, who is within everyone, supplies him whatever he wants. This is also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Tesham nitya biyuktanam yoga kshema bahamya. So, here too, Srila Prabhupada is the perfect example. He came alone from India with only $7, which he said was a few hours of spending in America. Today it's, can't even get anything for it practically. But Krishna gave him everything. He gave everything to Krishna. Nothing, everything for Krishna, nothing for myself. And Krishna gave him everything. Of course, spiritually, but even if you want to say materially, he gave him every material facility to use for spreading Krishna consciousness and maintaining himself, if that was even a consideration. Again, as stated here, tapyante lokatapena sadhava prayashojana. The best welfare activity is raising people to the platform of Krishna consciousness, since the conditioned souls are suffering only for want of Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada used to quote his Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. There is no scarcity in this world. The only scarcity is of Krishna consciousness. The Lord himself also comes to mitigate the suffering of humanity. Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhyutana madharmasya karatmanam shijamyaham paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya chaduskritam dharma samstapanarthaya sambhavami yuge yuge. Whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practice, O descendant of Bharata, and a predominant rise of irreligion, at that time I descend myself. Who is speaking this? Krishna. Krishna. Krishna descends. To deliver the pious and to annihilate the miscreants, as well as to reestablish the principles of religion, I advance myself millennium after millennium. Bhagavad Gita 4, 7, and 8. All the Shastras conclude, therefore, that spreading the Krishna consciousness movement is the best welfare activity in the world. Because of the ultimate benefit this bestows upon people in general, the Lord very quickly recognizes such service performed by a devotee. Translation again. It is said that great personalities almost always accept voluntary suffering because of the suffering of people in general. This is considered the highest method of worshiping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is present in everyone's heart. I asked Srila Prabhupada about welfare activities. I met Srila Prabhupada for the first time in Boston. And then every day I would come to his class. And after attending a few classes, I understood the importance of serving Krishna. But the question arose in my mind, what is the relationship between serving Krishna and serving humanity? So, at the end of one lecture, Srila Prabhupada concluded, Savai Pamso Paro Dharmo Yato Bhakti Rato Sije Apritiyata Yatmasu Prasidati, that the supreme occupation for the living entity is to engage in a devotional service to Krishna without any motivation and without any interruption. And that will completely satisfy the self. So after the class, I raised my hand and asked my question. And Srila Prabhupada replied, why are you coming here? Are we not offering service? Are we not offering service? That's why you are coming here. He said, what is service? Service means to relieve a person of his suffering. And that can be achieved only by releasing them from the clutches of material nature and elevating them to the platform of Krishna consciousness. And he gave the example of Dhruva Maharaj. That Dhruva Maharaj was insulted by his stepmother and he wanted some relief from his suffering and he wanted some material gain. And so his mother advised him to go into the forest to find God. And he chanted his mantra and under the instructions of the spiritual master. And in the end, God came before him. But seeing the Lord, being blessed with the treasure of Krishna consciousness, he had no further desire. He said, Swamin kritotarsni varamnayache, I'm fully satisfied. I was seeking after a piece of broken glass, and I've gotten the most precious jewel. So I'm fully satisfied. I do not desire anything else. And Srila Prabhupada said, is that not service? To bring someone to the point where he is so satisfied that he doesn't have any further desire? And then he told the story of a yogi or a saintly person, a sadhu, that when Alexander the Great came to India, he found a yogi performing austerities in the hot sun. And Alexander was so impressed that he got down and he approached the yogi. And he said, you know, I am so impressed by what you're doing here, just sitting so peacefully in meditation and in the hot sun. I want to give you something. I'm Alexander the Great. I'm the conqueror of the world. I will give you whatever you want. He said, the only thing I ask of you is that you please move to the side. You're blocking the sun. He was so satisfied internally, he didn't want anything external. He just didn't want his austerities to be interrupted. That scorching sun, he didn't want that the heat to be blocked by Alexander. And then Srila Prabhupada said that, you know, is this not service? To bring someone to the point where he's so satisfied he has no more demands. But he said, no more stealing, no more cheating, no more pickpocketing.
More than that.
Yeah. Now, at that time, I prided myself on my honesty, but I had one weakness. Some friend, well, you know how association is, it can be good or bad. So some friend sort of told me of how you could go into stores and just discreetly put things in your pocket and walk out with them. So when Srila Prabhupada said, you know, no more stealing, no more cheating, no more pickpocketing, I suddenly felt very guilty. But I realized that this was due to my deficiency in Krishna consciousness, and that by Krishna consciousness I would become free from that. So Srila Prabhupada convinced me, you know, as a young college student, that the Krishna consciousness movement was rendering the best service to the suffering humanity. And that answered my question. Now, on the point of that you can't change your karma, that you enjoy and suffer whatever you are destined to. There, too, I had quite a vivid experience in that early period here in Boston. Srila Prabhupada... Well, anyway. So, we were in a small storefront at 95 Glenville Avenue. And the lease was due to expire on a Friday. And, you know, devotees had been looking for a place. They couldn't really find anything. And so Satsvarupa Maharaj, you know, being very dutiful and proper, he was ready to renew the lease. But something inside of me kept saying, you know,
don't do it, don't do it. You know, keep looking, keep looking.
So I said, Maharaj,
he was actually very husky then. It's Friday night, so the landlord won't really know whether we're going to renew it or not in time until after the weekend. So we actually have, you know, 3 more days. So, you know, we frantically looked and we found a very big house, 40 North Beacon Street in Brighton. And, you know, I don't think we had time to write Srila Prabhupada. It was very rare to phone him. Somehow we got in touch with Srila Prabhupada, and, you know, he said, yeah, you know, Giriraj's father is a lawyer, so, you know, send him the documents, and if he approves, you know, you can go ahead. So, when I joined, I came with some money, and
how much was that?
You're very inquisitive. Well, for those days it was a lot, especially for maybe, I don't know, $3,000, $5,000. It was a good amount. It's a good amount. And, you know, so I asked Srila Prabhupada, what should I do with it? And at first he said, put it in my book fund. But then he knew we were looking for another place. So then he said, well, you know, you can keep it and if you need, you can use it for the... So we had that money. And, you know, eventually we got the place. But what I'm leading up to is that in the course of it, we went to the, I don't know if it's the property owner or the real estate agent, but he was like a wealthy man, very wealthy man. So we went into like his plush office in Boston, and, you know, like sofas and, you know, big maybe mahogany desk and, you know, nice chairs and everything. And he was dressed in a dark suit, you know, real proper. He had sort of wavy gray hair, and he looked very respectable. But he was a smoker. And he looked in his pocket. I think it was pretty early in the morning. He looked in his pocket, and there were no cigarettes left. So he turned to the ashtray on his desk and was looking around for cigarette butts that had a little tobacco left to smoke. And I was struck by the truth of what Srila Prabhupada taught us, that whatever your destiny is, it will come to you. I mean, he often gave the example of hippies, that they came from wealthy families, many of them, but they would end up sleeping in the park, just like a vagabond, you know, or as we would say today, a homeless person. I slept in a couple of parks myself in the day. So here he was, you know, this very wealthy man, all nicely dressed up, just like a bum on the street looking for a cigarette bucket if he could smoke. It's just his destiny. So yeah, eventually we got the place, and then the press moved there, and it was a very big step. But yeah, I could see that you really can't change a person's destiny. But if you give them Krishna consciousness, then everything will change.
Just another thing on that point of improving people's conditions by material adjustments. One of the, as I mentioned yesterday, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, Srila Prabhupada would speak at the temple. And Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, he would speak outside, usually at a university. And he gave one talk at the Harvard Divinity School. Yes, in Cambridge. It's just nearby. And those students, they probably were very smart, but they definitely thought they were smart. And after Prabhupada's lecture, you know, a lot of hands shot up to sort of challenge him. And the first one, he was saying, you know, you say that just by chanting, you know, all problems will be solved. But there have been movements in Russia in which people would chant God's name. But what good did it really do? You know, things really change when with the revolution. There was a book that devotees used to read a while ago about, I guess, a Russian young man who heard a lecture that said you should always like chant God's name, so he was doing that, and there was a culture of that. And so Srila Prabhupada said that the people in Russia now, since the revolution, are they happy?
No.
The boy had to admit, no, they're not. And Prabhupada said, then what is the use of that revolution?
Very good point.
And he said, and even if things do get better for a while, they'll get worse again. And now they've made another revolution, which was the downfall of the Soviet regime. I mean, it's just like, so it was true. It was true. You can't really make a significant enduring change by political activism or any material method. Then another hand, you know. You know, you say that by repeating Hare Krishna, you will get some result. But couldn't you get the same result by repeating anything? Just by repeating 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. And Srila Prabhupada replied, of course, that is not possible. But you can try counting, and when you get tired of counting, you can try chanting. And
very good answer. Beautiful.
Yeah, even the students, they were stunned. You know, Prabhupada was so fast, you know, just one after the other.
Very quick.
And then another one challenged, you know, have you... I don't remember exactly whether it was like, have you seen Krishna? Or are you truly happy? Or whatever it is. Prabhupada said, if I tell you falsely that I've seen God, will you believe me? And the young man said, no, I won't. Then Prabhupada said, then what is the use of asking the question? So, like, one by one, the students shot up their hands and Prabhupada, like, shot them down.
Amazing. Prabhupada is amazing.
Yeah, really. And by then, I had come with a Red Rambler station wagon, so I was driving devotees, because the devotees didn't have any motor vehicle then. It was, you know. So I was just like loitering amongst the students. They were like so stunned by Srila Prabhupada's brilliance. Just sort of wandering amongst them and listening to their talks. And then Jadarani, one of the lady devotees at the time, she came up to me and like in Prabhupada's voice, like affectionately in Prabhupada's voice, "So, where is the driver?" I said, "Oh my God, Prabhupada is waiting for me." So I ran, you know, out to the car, and Prabhupada and the devotees piled in. And we had come during daylight, but by then it was dark. And I wasn't exactly sure of the way, but I thought I could figure it out. So I tried to go, you know, left and right, as I thought. And but after a while, I got a sinking feeling that we were getting more and more lost, getting further and further away. So I had to, like, admit it. So I, you know, I said, "Does anyone know the way back to the temple?" No one knew. And Prabhupada, I was in the driver's seat and Prabhupada was next to me. "Is not the driver supposed to know the way?" And, you know, I was like so covered or whatever. I didn't know I was the driver. I didn't know I had duties. I just thought I was being a good guy by driving the devotees in my car. So, anyway, eventually somehow we put our heads together and made our way back. And so, you know, I jumped out and opened the door for Srila Prabhupada, and I said, "Srila Prabhupada, I'm really sorry for getting us lost." And he smiled at me with such compassion, you know, such love and compassion, and he said, "That's all right." And I was really struck because I had just seen Srila Prabhupada like dismantle all these challenges from all these bright students. So I knew if he wanted, he could have destroyed me, you know, in an instant. But, you know, his brilliance, if you want to call it that, his knowledge was tempered with great love and compassion. And I thought, "Oh, this is like, this is really wonderful. This is the best."
Amazing.
So, I guess... there's more, but I could stop here. Maybe you have questions or contributions that could lead to more. Yes, Maharaj.
You were talking about
everybody here?
No.
Do we have a traveling microphone? Well, I think I can hear you, and then I'll repeat it in this microphone.
Okay, all right. First of all, thank you very much for giving a wonderful class and really very much alive.
Repeat that.
Really
good. We'll come to that later.
No, it's not that. You have to be dead. And you know one thing, don't mind my practice. generally I better sit in the class, I feel sleepy, but in your class I'm happy. So, my question is, beyond any doubt, the topak was a Mahabhagavatashna.
Says beyond any doubt, Srila Prabhupada was a Mahavaishnava, Mahabhagavat Vaishnava, on the highest level, yes.
And he was doing whatever he was doing, he was doing for the pleasure of Krishna, Guru Gauram, and Radha Krishna. Keeping that in mind, he came in the ship and he had two heart attacks. Why it was like this? When he so exalted Vaishnava, no doubt, I have no doubt. Even I asked Prabhupada once question, but I want answer from you, that why he was put into so many difficulties? Two heart attacks, no friends, no money,
Seasickness,
and when he was leaving, this is the answer.
Krishna, the pure devotee, by definition, is fully surrendered to Krishna. And Krishna uses the example of the pure devotee for the benefit of others. Srila Prabhupada said, in the beginning Krishna tested me. I mean, that's his humble perspective. He said, in the beginning Krishna tested me by taking everything away from me. And in the end he tested me by giving me everything. But in both circumstances he adhered to the lotus feet of Krishna. And I think such examples, I know it does with me and I'm sure it does with all of us, it makes us think, if Prabhupada could suffer so much for the sake of others, then what about us? I saw this in Srila Prabhupada. He would do it voluntarily also. Whatever he asked us to do, in terms of sacrifice or austerity, he was ready to do the same plus more. And that's like very inspiring. Very inspiring. So what is our sacrifice compared to his? I mean, on the point of illness, Srila Prabhupada said one should not become bewildered, you know, if the spiritual master becomes ill. And at a later stage, it's said that the spiritual master experiences illness to give the disciples a chance to render service. But, yeah, I think, even say that question of age. We might think, oh, I'm too old now. You know, it's too late. The Prabhupada showed it's never too late. You know, he came at the age of 69, which so
almost 70 when he landed here.
Yeah. And at the Ardha Kumbh Mela, this is just an example, at the Ardha Kumbh Mela in Allahabad in 1971. It was really cold. You know, it's January. And, we didn't have much money, we didn't have much facility. About all we had was our sleeping bags. And, frankly, for most of us, it was hard to get out of those sleeping baths in the morning with the prospect of taking bath in like freezing cold water from a pump. And Prabhupada detected, you know, that we were doing that. So he came out, you know, with his frail health, he came out at 4 in the morning, 3:45 in the morning, and he was taking bath in that freezing cold water.
He was not really bad.
No, he was not, you know. And then when the news spread to us, like, we all just got out of our sleeping bags and rushed out. And then every day we did it, because we didn't want Prabhupada to have to do that again. So he was ready to make every sacrifice that he wanted us to make, plus more. Yes?
Thank you. I asked the same question to Srila Prabhupada in Bombay 77.
Okay.
When I went to personal ceremony, you must remember in the whole episode we came from Kolkata, from Mayapur, and Mayapur to Kolkata, then we came to Bombay. Prabhupada said, I want to stay in my quarter. But if he was not ready. You remember that?
I do.
And you're running around here and there. Some of the other different ones, you know, and you know, but when you work, what's going on? So, he was not feeling bad. I asked that question to Srila Prabhupada. It was my gross ignorance or foolishness, whatever you say. First place, I had no doubt about his greatness or his purity or his Mahabhagavat. Because before I met Prabhupada, I saw Prabhupada, I had seen quite a good number of saints in India. This was my hobby from my young age. But then, divine arrangement, I met Prabhupada and I was really very much impressed. So, I asked the question, Prabhupada, why you are sick? Keeping that in my mind that pure Buddha should not be sick. I say, he's a Mahabharata Vaishnava. I had no doubt in this. So what was his reply to me? Because of you I am sick. Very emphatically he said. I have taken so many disciples, I have taken their karma.
Yeah.
What do you think of this?
Why did you make Prabhupada sick? I think it's true. I think it's true. I'm not sure how much that would have applied to the voyage on the Jaladuta, but that is true, no doubt. No doubt.
Why not apply to the voyage and Jaladuta? Because he had some travel in India.
It's true, he did.
Yeah, that one guy, what was his name?
Prabhakar Mishra.
Prabhakar Mishra. And you know, Prabhakar Mishra, I have seen him after the Vipassana Prabhupada. This person was with one tantric in India. I gave up Prabhupada. I met him in the plane. And he was eating this, you know, what do you call it, tobacco? Mm-hmm. Taking, you know, some.
Yeah, it could be.
Yeah.
It could be. That's true. That is another reason why the spiritual master gets sick.
So then I got the answer from Prabhupada that because of my karma, our karma, the devotee has no karma. It's suffering. And another thing, it was confirmed in the last days of Srila Prabhupada in Vrindavan. Then Srila Prabhupada gave the last translation, last supper of the Brahma Vimohan Leela.
Yes.
You were there that time?
I was.
Yeah, you were. Jayadvita Maharaj was there, he was from Jari. And I was charging his feet, sitting at his lotus feet. And Prabhupada gave such a beautiful translation, beautiful purpose to this last translation. He really touched the heart. And Jayadvita Swami was asked the question by Prabhupada, Jayadvita, what do you think? Translation is perfect in this kind of situation. He was lying down and translating.
Yes.
And he said, Prabhupada is perfect. Really, not perfect, more than perfect. So sweet, so much information is there and touching the heart. So he is sick, but his consciousness is so high, so elevated.
Yes.
Body is sick.
Yes. So Srila Prabhupada draws by his example in every situation. Every situation is a perfect example. So yeah, we pray for his mercy, and I pray for the mercy of all of you that we can follow in his footsteps. Thank you very much. Alright, last question.
So, when I came last days, my GVC was Brahmananda, not Africa.
Yes.
He came to his home in 77, when Prabhupada was in Vrindavan. So, when my GVC entered the room of Prabhupada, Prabhupada's first question was, "Where is Sri Radha?" I'm so tiny, why? You know, Prabhupada is so kind, so merciful. So then he said, "Prabhupada, he's in Africa." So then he sent me the telegram, I came. When I came, and I was warned by Ramakrishna Maharaj, he said, "Don't touch Prabhupada's feet. Prabhupada has warned us, nobody should touch his feet." I used to massage him, I was massaging his legs, not touching his feet. So then Bhaktisara Maharaj was sitting close to Srila Prabhupada. And he inquired from him very slowly, "Who's massaging?" So he said, "Navin Bindal Maharaj." Then that I heard Prabhupada said, I'm feeling comforted. So everybody was stopped. The night person to him, he this. Then Prabhupada says, "I heard him. Why you are massaging my feet?" Prabhupada, "I told nobody should touch your feet. Nobody should touch my feet, but you can touch my feet." So point is, he didn't love anybody else. I'm thinking because I was too fallen, that's why he wanted to bestow his blessing upon me. And what is the concept?
I don't know, but hearing this story, I feel like I want to touch your feet.
That's a great message.
Well, what I thought when I heard is he meant like you shouldn't touch his feet, like people come like to touch the feet to like get relieved of their karma. But it was a common practice in the like massaging, we would massage his feet. But I think he felt, I don't know. But you're a very fortunate soul, I know that. We're all fortunate by Srila Prabhupada's grace. And we're even more fortunate now because we have each other. So, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai.